But we're going to actually discuss that when we come back. So we're gonna visit that issue. We're gonna talk about the issue of culture in organized crime. What is its contribution to it lasting and the success of it? Then we're gonna look at the gangs, so to speak, what we call gangs, and get some real insight as to how they're organized, what the significance has been historically to us and to our community, and just look at a host of other things there. So we're gonna be right back in a few minutes, because we've got to go into NPR, and this is the Sunday Forum. Here with your host, Walter L. Smith II, along with the members of the Fourth Estate crew, with our guest, Kevin Liddell. And discussion is the history of black organized crime.
You are tuned to the Sunday Forum here on WMNF Tampa.
Homeland Security Department has announced plans to remove the migrants. Deportation flights expected to start today. And the department says it has already moved some 2,000 migrants away from the bridge in Del Rio for processing. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson will be in the U.S. this week. Vicky Barker reports from London.
Boris Johnson will be visiting the White House for the first time since Joe Biden became president. Among other things, he's expected to press Mr. Biden to relax the U.S. travel ban on most British travelers, particularly now that the UK has eased many of its COVID restrictions on arrivals from the US. Johnson is also expected to advocate for the US to do more to address the looming humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan, triggered in large part by the speed and timing of the US withdrawal. At the UN General Assembly this week, Johnson's expected to challenge the roughly 100 world leaders present to deliver on their climate commitments ahead of the COP26 conference, which Britain is hosting in Glasgow this November. For NPR News, I'm Vicky Barker in London.
Boris Johnson is set to visit the White House amid the submarine dispute with France. France has recalled its ambassadors to the U.S. and Australia over the deal that led Australia to cancel a submarine contract with Paris in favor of a deal to use U.S. and British technology to build nuclear-powered subs. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison said today that he understands French anger, but that he does not regret putting Australia's national interests first. The Federal Reserve gathers this week amid uncertainty about the economy as a Delta variant continues to spread. NPR's Rafael Nam reports that markets are eager for more details on what the Fed is thinking.
Over the summer, the economy was looking good. People were traveling again and going out to restaurants and ballparks. Then the Delta variant hit, and things have changed. Stock markets have tumbled this month as investors try to figure out where the economy is headed next. So when the Fed gathers this week, investors will want to hear some guidance on the economy. Fed Chair Jerome Powell will address reporters on Wednesday. Importantly, the Fed will also provide new projections for key economic indicators, including inflation and unemployment, as well as expectations for where interest rates are headed over the next several years. Rafael Nam, NPR News.
And you're listening to NPR News. Red flag warnings are up this weekend in California, where crews are working to protect the giant trees in Sequoia National Park from a raging wildfire known as the KNP complex. The fire has already burned into a few groves of giant sequoias. Officials have yet to determine the damage. Drought conditions tied to climate change making wildfires harder to fight. Streaming services are dominating the nominees of this year's Primetime Emmy Awards. A live in-person ceremony will be broadcast and shown on demand this evening. NPR's Mandalito Barco reports.
The Netflix series The Crown is nominated for 24 Emmy Awards. Its fourth season featured Olivia Colman as Queen Elizabeth and Emma Corrin as Princess Diana. Both are nominated for Outstanding Lead Actress in a Drama.
All I want is to be loved. It's all any of us want from you.
In the comedy categories, the feel-good series Ted Lasso from Apple TV Plus is expected to sweep. Jason Sudeikis is nominated for his starring role as a folksy American coaching an English soccer team.
Ted Lasso welcome wagon has arrived.
Ted!
In the mix for lead actress, MJ Rodriguez from the FX show Pose has already made history. She's the first trans Emmy nominee in a major acting category. Mandalit Del Barco, NPR News.
The Philippine boxing star Manny Pacquiao, who serves in the Philippine Senate, says he will run for president in next year's elections. Pacquiao accepted the nomination of a faction he leads within the ruling party at the party's national convention today. I'm Giles Snyder, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include TIAA. When one helps others' futures, their own can take a back seat. TIAA is dedicated to helping people pursue the retirement they deserve. More at TIAA.org/neverrunout.
88.5 WMNF wants to hear from local artists like you. If you're a poet around Tampa Bay, go to our website at WMNF.org. From there, click on Poets of the Month under the Programming tab. If you're selected, your poem will be broadcasted on our airwaves. Be one of WMNF's first Poets of the Month by going to WMNF.org.
This is a WMNF public service announcement. ReachUp Incorporated, a nonprofit organization offering SWIFT, Stronger with Involved Focused Fathers, a program funded by the Children's Board of Hillsborough County for fathers, father figures, and couples with children ages 5 and under, designed to increase father involvement in their children's development and education. Courses include instruction about relationships for parents and co-parents and on early childhood development. They are offered in English and Spanish. More at reachupincorporated.org.
This is Truth Radio, 88.5 WMNF.
Things. Me and the Jam On production crew here are taking over this world. So we want all of you ding-dangers to pack up your hips and your hocks, get on your high horses, and vamoose!
That was Nucleus, Jam On Revenge, the Wicked Wicked song. Yes, wicked, yes, wicked. I chose it. Yes. I admit to it. I love it.
Okay, take
the
it
funk
back.
That's coming into your ear holes this morning right here on WMNF 88.5 FM on the Sunday Forum. Yes, this is the Sunday Forum. Yes, yes. The gospel hour came on before we did. This is not a gospel time.
<It's> Nothing wrong with gospel.
Nothing wrong with gospel. But people can get funky on Sunday, too.
That's right.
All right, all right, all right, all right. It's 9:11. It's 11 minutes after 9.
9:11.
Wiggy, 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 wiggy. Right here. Hey, folks, listen. Our guest this morning is Brother Kevin Liddell. Kevin, you there with us?
Kevin?
We still got Kevin here with us?
Yeah, I'm here, my brother.
All right. All right. You like that, man?
Man, you all are doing... Y'all got the old school pumping, man. I feel it.
You being from the Midwest out there, boy. I know this pumps all the time out there, right?
Man, oh, yeah, man. Man, I remember that, man, riding my big wheel down the neighborhood and hearing that and that morning, like pumping out of... Out of
row houses, row house windows,
all that kind of stuff, and car windows, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm a tad bit younger, so you know.
Yeah. He keeps saying that. You try to be funny. I'm gonna get you later, dude. But yo, but listen, we thank you for joining us this morning as we talk about this history, history of black organized crime. In these United States. But before we do, we have some calls here. Let's go to the callers. Callers.
I think we have Adam on the line right now.
Adam, what's going on, man?
Yes, yes, brothers. Definitely enjoying the show. Just wanted to say, as far as the comments about the black gangsters, just also wanted to say that we talk about black gangsterism through the prism of the Costa Nostra, which was an Italian organization. But we need to also talk about, which I, you know, being that I'm from up north as well, from Chicago specifically, is that we've had people like, you know, like a Nicky Barnes, like, you know, like a few Ricky Ross. You know, we need to mention them because we also... In our community, we like to name drop people like Al Capone and all these other people. But the thing is that also in Chicago and also in Harlem, the thing is that in these communities, the Italians, for one, were not really interested in those areas until they saw this underground economy that was generating a lot of revenue. And I think... someone told me that, and like for one, Brownsville was able to, in terms of the revenue, which is a predominantly like black area, historically black area in Chicago, they gained a lot of revenue from the numbers game, as well as in Harlem. The Italians didn't intrude into Harlem until they found that it was quite profitable, the numbers racket that was in Harlem. But back to what you initially said as far as talking about the violence that is in our community. It's a stain on our community. It's a stain on our, you know, collective community soul that if we do not bring some sort of accountability to what happened to that baby, that four-year-old. A community is only viable and it shows its worth when it's able to protect its most vulnerable. And if we cannot protect our children, if we can't protect our babies, and I'll just say this, that it's been since August 22nd, since this tragic incident happened, and there has been no lead, there has not been any arrests that were made. As you said, Walt, someone, and there are a lot of people that know something. The thing is that, for the last like 48 to 72 hours, there has been a connection with the person, Gabby Petito. It's like, you know, like, where's Waldo? People are saying, where's Gabby? Where's Gabby? And the thing is that you've had people, every show, if you look at every news show, it leads off of, where's Gabby? Where's Gabby? I want to say that we need to be, as a community, because this is our child that died senselessly. We need to be bringing attention to it, and every single day we need to ask where. And I'm going to say, if I'm allowed, Walt, can I say her name?
Absolutely.
Sunny Bell. Say her name.
Sunny Bell.
They have hashtags for all kinds of things. Let's have a hashtag for justice for Sunny Bell. The thing is that we need to say that every day until that person or person is brought to justice. And we need to, like, you know, not rest until this happens. Because if a four-year-old baby who was shot, and as you said, it's coming more crystal clear that it was mistaken identity, someone has to give that person up. Or that person or persons, they need to turn themselves in. Because the thing is that they'll never be able to live a life where they'll be able to be at peace, because that's going to be a stain on your soul. So all I'll just say, the people that know something, say something, as Walt offered. If you don't want to say anything, you know what, call him, tell him who or whatever, and you don't have to be involved with it. But the thing is that we can't allow this. We cannot allow
a four-year-old baby.
That's what, because I'm telling you, if it was another community, if it was a white little girl by the name of Sunny, instead of Sunny with an I, Sunny with a Y, and she was murdered senselessly, this whole community, the whole Tampa community would be raising money as far as crime trackers, and be exuding a lot of pressure onto the Tampa Police Department, as well as the city government, to do something about this. Because, like I said, everybody's talking about here in Florida, because the fiance's parents have a home in Northport, and they are talking about, where's Gabby? Where's Gabby? And I was like, where's Brian? Where's Brian? Nobody's talked about finding the killers for Sunny Bell. And I've talked to other people. They didn't know anything about this story because it hasn't been covered. And this is right here in our community. So other communities can decide and choose what they want to focus and spotlight on. But you know what? Our community, our African community, our people of color community, we need to raise our voices. And this is the Sunday Forum, and I know that it's Sunday morning, and I know that there are saints in all of these churches all around this time period. There should be ministers all throughout the churches here in Tampa that are like saying, let's find who the killer for Sunny Bell.
Mm-hmm.
Justice for Sunny Bell.
All right.
And that's all I got to say. I can't, express this any more urgently, that we need to keep the attention and keep the focus until those people that did this heinous crime to this sweet soul are brought to justice. So justice for Sunny Bell.
All right.
Everybody.
Appreciate you, man. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you.
All right. Sunny Bell, bro.
Yeah.
Sunny Bell.
Right.
We got another call on here.
Yes.
All right, let's go.
Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
All right, caller.
What's going on?
Welcome to the Sunday Forum.
Yeah. Hate on the Post Plantation here. Yeah, you know, if you're going to be successful in organized crime in America, you got to be in with the police. Because the police are the ones to protect those, for example, in the drug game at the top. And by doing so, they get valuable information. And in the end, there's more revenue generated by popping people underneath them. You know, it's all kind of in motion. But I had called when you had your last guest on, so I just would like to, with the earth and everything, all we have to do is sit back and watch them destroy themselves. You know, people don't realize what kind of world we're going into. I mean, this whole thing that's going on right now really has to do with the scarcity of resources on the climate, on the planet. That's why the prices of a lot of these materials have gone up. It's not really a bad thing. Like, let's say if gas goes up to $10 a gallon tomorrow, that's not bad, because we need to be using less gas. You know, right now they're trying to protect the oldest tree on the earth, then the sequoia, and they're trying to protect the resort over there, and whatever it is, Reno or something, that area. So this is capitalism. Do you guys know where the largest wildfire on the earth is right now?
The largest wildfire?
Yeah.
Where?
No.
On earth?
Russia. You know, the wildfires in Siberia, the smoke is into the Arctic. So while we spend so much resource and energy trying to save these resorts, the planet's burning without people even realizing. I think, and I heard on the radio, I don't have the internet, so I didn't get to verify. I think it's 7 million square acres, you could verify that. But it's enormous, way bigger than the ones in California and Oregon. And I'll just end with that comment. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, appreciate you.
Extreme climate.
I'm telling you, man. Absolutely. All right. Let's get back to our guest. Kevin.
Yes, sir.
All right. Let's talk.
Yes, sir, brother. And before we jump back into it, definitely say her name. You know, you don't know what that baby. You know what I'm saying?
It's Sunny Bell.
It's ridiculous. I mean, you know, I was reading stuff back home, and it was 13 children was killed in St. Louis, man, 6 months, man. And then there was a bunch of children killed in Chicago, you know, Atlanta. I mean, this thing is an epidemic of babies getting killed by guys who don't value or honor any kind of code. And it was a time where guys like that wouldn't be able to walk around.
Yeah, right,
you know,
right.
To be honest with you, you know, like, you don't harm or touch no baby. You know what I'm saying?
Right, that's right.
No matter if it's an accident or not, or misidentification, you know, the young brother or brothers, they need to turn themselves in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you know,
because, absolutely.
You know, that's something you don't do.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we talked about the issue of culture. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about culture with regard to black organized crime.
Absolutely. Well, understanding black culture or African culture or African American culture is that a lot of the black gangs or black organized criminality was not created strictly off of profit at first. It was created off of protection that manifested into being created off of making profit. Now, in comparison to the Italians, is that the Italians also came over for the purpose of protection of their community, but also for the purpose of extorting their community and making a profit off their community. For, you know, the mafia existed, you know, for like almost 200 years over in Sicily before they even came to the United States, you know, right. And, you know, as part of rebel groups fighting invaders onto the island of Sicily and Italy. So, you know, so they have a long history of criminality and clannish family ties within their organization. Right. So when they came over to the U.S., their first thing was to extort and to their own community under the black hate.
We're losing you there.
Yes, you hear me?
Okay, we hear you now, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And now with the African-Americans, a bus came up from the South and was kind of forced to only deal within our community because of segregation and Jim Crow. So, and the, out of that was born a need for protection. And from the need for protection, out of that was born a need for us to generate our own economy. You know, so it's culturally, it was started for two different reasons. You know, those two different organizations were created for two different reasons. So it's kind of hard to compare the two, right? And also, it's kind of hard to compare the two because, you know, Italians being Europeans, being white folks, you know, they can easily assimilate in a racist society, whereas black folks cannot.
Mm. You know?
So that's the thing. So that's what makes it so different and so unique and such a microcosm within itself. And also to understand too that black organized crime is not homogenous. You know, like other organized crime groups, it's really not homogenous. You know, you have black organized crime groups that specialize in specific things. You know, drug trafficking. Back in the day, you had them specialize in extortion or murder for hire.
Right.
You know, it was not homogenous. Now, you had groups that all worked together for a common goal, or you had organizations that did all of it, that did extortion, racketeering, drug trafficking, money laundering, all of it as well. But for the most part, black organized crime is really not as homogenous as other criminal groups. And so that's why you have a plethora of different kinds of black criminality, of organized black criminality, mm-hmm. from your street gangs to your street, or what they say in Chicago, and I know the brother from Chicago could attest to this, street organization, to just drug trafficking crews, to robbery crews. So it's set up differently because it's not homogenous and it was not really fully connected. Although you have certain organized crime groups, black organized crime groups that are highly organized and highly interconnected and highly structured, you have some that may not be as structured, right? So I think that's the biggest difference. It's kind of, you know, when we talk about black organized crime, we want to be kind of specific on what avenue we're speaking on black organized crime, if that makes sense.
Right, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have a question?
Yeah, this is Mobili, and I do want to ask you about the Black Mafia family in terms of how large that was, how organized it was, what they engaged in, and what culturally, how important they were. Because they did go on to become a hip-hop label, I do believe.
Yeah. I'll speak a little bit on it. I mean, I don't want to go too dope into there. Mm-hmm. To their organizational structure. I mean, I know a few of them, so I'm not going to really dove too deep into it. But what I would say is that BMF or Black Mafia Family was basically just a group of brothers out of Detroit and connected with a group of brothers from St. Louis. And they created a pipeline and a network that I won't say hasn't been seen because it's been done before. You know, you just don't hear about it. But they created a network, and it became popularized because when they went to Atlanta to create a hip-hop label, by happenstance of a lot of hip-hop and rap groups, they glorized that kind of lifestyle. So those guys were pretty much pumped up basically by the glorification of what they were doing. But as a result, it heavily influenced hip hop and heavily influenced younger folks, you know, folks within my generation, to emulate and to be impressed by individuals, who created that kind of lifestyle for themselves. Again, brothers, I mean, I didn't want to jump too much into it because of certain relationships.
Right. And, understood.
You know, with certain guys.
So, understood.
But I'll say this, that, you know, that it BMF definitely became a cornerstone in gangster hip hop in the late 90s or early 2000s, especially with their extravagant lifestyle, and they had a very charismatic leader, you know, who who basked in that glory, you know, and he basked in that glory to his detriment as well, and to the detriment of their organization, to the detriment of people around him.
Well, let's shift gears a little bit, and let's look at some of the things that we many of us probably have not heard about. For instance, you and I know about it because, you know, we're connoisseurs, so to speak, of the history. When we talk about gangs and organized, you can't talk about organized crime without talking about the gangs, right? Mm-hmm. When we talk about organizations and you talk about the Black Power movement and protection of communities. So when we talk about that, we talk about groups, people like Jeff Fort,
mm-hmm.
P. Stone, gangsters, and the El Rukins, you know, people mm-hmm. like that. It, of course, being the same group, of course. Right. You know, can you tell us? Let's just talk about that for a minute, because you know we talk about Bumpy Johnson, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it just happens to be that I have a cousin who's very popular, Greg Mathis, who is a member of, or was a member of the Earl Flynn's.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and they were known for their raid that they did in the Earth, Wind, and Fire concert in the 70s.
Right.
And he was part of that, of the group at that particular point. But we talk about these groups, but then when we look at the fictitious alignment that was made, for instance, in one of the episodes of Godfather of Harlem, how real is that? How real? What are the realities of these things, of these alliances, of how they moved and things like that? What are some of the histories?
Oh, brother, I would say in terms of the Godfather of Harlem, I would say about 75% of it is actually really accurate. I would say that. I would say that building alliances, if you build alliances with other organizations and other groups, you do it for the benefit of your survival and what you're trying to do. So it's very common to build alliances. It's common to build alliances with multiple groups. There's groups that have alliances with several different groups that may beef with each other, but they just come together for, you know, for the potential to make money and to keep, you know, certain legal foes off their back.
But there was a particular protection aspect, that a community protection aspect that existed with these groups.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to speak a little bit on Jeff Fort in Chicago, you know, it was Jeff Fort and a brother named Mickey Caldwell, you know, who Mickey Caldwell passed, and Jeff Fort is serving time at ADX Florence right now. The Blackstone Rangers was created as an organization, okay? It was an organization to protect the Black community in the Woodlawn area on the south side of Chicago. You know, and it was a Black political organization, which a lot of people call it a street gang, but it was a Black political organization that engaged in various forms of criminality. One of the things that they did was that they would go in and they would work with, you know, government agencies to provide, government assistance or community-based assistance to the community of Woodlawn. You know, that's one of the things that they would do. It's one of the highlights, the good things that they would do. Now, in terms of them getting heavily involved and connecting with organized crime, that's a very interesting story. Mickey Caldwell, who was the lieutenant or second in command in the Blackstone Rangers, you know, who later started the Mickey Cobras, he actually had a big connection at the time with the Chicago Outfit or the Chicago Italian Mafia. And the Chicago Italian Mafia at the time was providing them with heroin during the days of the French Connection, because this all took place back in the late 60s, early 70s.
What do they call it, man? Doogie? Call it a doogie.
Well, that's a New York thing. You know what I'm saying? That wasn't really a Chicago thing, or that wasn't a Midwest thing. That was more of an East Coast thing. They called it that.
You know? Right.
Yeah, but it's the same thing. You know, but so, you know, as a result, Caldwell kind of learned how the Chicago outfit, the Chicago Mafia, was operating and tried to emulate it within the Blackstone Rangers and later the Mickey Cobras when they had a split of differences in which Jeff Ford wanted to move that organization one way, Mickey Caldwell wanted to move it another way. Mickey Caldwell got involved in unions, similar to what the Mafia did. He tried to organize, before Fight for 15, he tried to organize fast food workers on the south side of Chicago. But into a union and receiving kickbacks in exchange of helping them get jobs at fast food restaurants in Chicago, Taros and Chicken, and you had another smaller, you know, local chains at the time. And he was bringing in the Chicago outfit net. Something happened, and the Chicago outfit ended up killing him. You know, some kind of discrepancy on money, and he ended up killed. Now, that touched off a conflict with the Blackstone Rangers and the Chicago Italian Mafia, which came to a stalemate and came to some conversation. Now, keep in mind, I say this to say that, you know, street gangs and organized crime are hip tied together. And in many aspects, a lot of street gangs are highly organized and have the numbers to basically hold off any encroachments in their territory, whether it's organized crime, police, or who else. And that empowered a lot of youth. Seeing these young brothers being able to essentially, I won't say punk the Italian Mafia, but kind of bring them to a stalemate. And these are young brothers, you know, that are teenagers to their early 20s at the time, kind of empowered a lot of youth to want to be a part of something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. want to be a part of something like, man, but these brothers got power. They want to be a part of something like that.
That's interesting.
And not realizing that it was a lot of other political negotiations behind the scenes, you know, what we call the streets political negotiations behind the scenes around that kind of led to that stalemate.
Right. And, you know, we look at movies like Gangs of New York, right, with Leonardo DiCaprio, which doesn't glamorize anything, but it was a very violent movie. Extremely violent. The early years of this whole thing in terms of street gangs in New York, very violent, extremely violent. When we look at groups like the Folk Nation, right, mm-hmm. Gangsta Disciples, we look at, we got to go back and we got to think about some of the origins, like, some of the people that were involved in Numbers Run and things like that. I mean, we talk about Bumpy Johnson, right? But we can't ignore like Stephanie Sinclair or Casper Holstein,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
These are names that are not commonly spoken when we talk about that, especially down here in the South. In the South, we really don't really talk about that type of stuff. We talk more in terms of our knowledge of Italian mafia history and stuff like that because, you know, here in Tampa, we have a very long history of that. You know, whether we talk about Irish mob, which was Charlie Wall, who for a long time ran the organized crime in Tampa. Of course, you know, it ended up being Santo Traficante ultimately, and they came to blows, and then Walls knocked off, and we have that particular mob family, the Traficante family, that's left, opening the door for that whole mob thing to take place, where there's a control over what prohibition. Over liquor sales and things like that, which is the big thing at that particular point until drugs start coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And now when we start talking about drugs, I can't help but think about Valentin Narcisse. Brother Dr. Valentin Narcisse, who's a fictitious character, but is based on on a real life person by the name of Casper Holstein. And Holstein was from the Caribbean, right? From Trinidad.
Yes, he was.
And, you know, and we talk about a guy, a very intelligent man, who had very close ties with UNIA.
Yes, he did. Yep.
And with the NAACP.
Yeah, he did. He wrote
articles for the people. I mean, like, he knew W.E.B. Du Bois. Like, you know what I mean? So we're not talking about dumb people. We're talking about some very intelligent individuals. So fast forward today, I think many of us made the mistake of thinking that many of the gangs and organizations that we see now are just dumb people. And I'm thinking to myself, man, I watch some of these documentaries out there, and I'm like, that is just not the case. That simply is not the case.
Absolutely. And to speak on that, too, when we're talking about Jeff Fort, right, from that Keystone Blackstone Rangers, and later the El Rukins, you know, Jeff Fort was a community-based activist. He worked with Jesse Jackson, you know, in Chicago. He worked with Fred Hampton with the Black Panther Party in Chicago, you know, and to help him with the formation of the Rainbow Coalition, you know, which that's something that Fred Hampton helped to create, you have to understand that, you know, our experience in America is different than what the Italians or the Irish or the Chinese or the Mexicans experienced. Our experience in America was based strictly off of oppression and enslavement, you know. So we have a whole different approach to the way we do things based on our experience. You know, that's why it's very hard to kind of compare the two, if that makes sense, you know.
Right.
So, you know, you have to look at, even in Chicago, again, Teddy Roe, who's a big-time policy king, Ed Johnson, you know, a policy Sam, you know, these folks, you know, will work with the outfit or go to war with the outfit, just like Bumpy Johnson did, Casper Holstein did up in New York. But they also did a lot of political work. Right. They did a lot of donations to the churches, Negro College Fund. You know, people don't realize, you know, Bumpy Johnson did a lot of work in the Civil Rights Movement.
Right.
A lot of work in the Civil Rights Movement. That was barely touched on that series. That's why that series is only 75% accurate. He did a lot of work in the Civil Rights Movement. You know, these men and these women were not just people that were destroying our community. These men and women were people that were trying their best to uplift our community with the resources that they had. Unfortunately, many of them did it the wrong way.
Right.
You know.
When we talk organized crime, and make clear that I'm not calling him, I'm not grouping him with this with organized crime, but he was accused of it, and that's Marcus Garvey. When we talk about the creation of the UNIA, and we talk about Black Star Line and so forth, they tried really hard to United States government through the FBI at that particular time in its creation targeted the UNIA in order to group it as an organized crime group.
They were just being racist.
Yeah, they were. But it was no different, right? And the efforts were to do that and put them in that light in order to discredit them in the community, right? But let me, I tell you what, we're going to come back to that thought in just a minute because we only have a few minutes left. We got 30 seconds, folks. I'm sorry, but we had to get the history in there. And we also have a lot of people that are really speaking very, very a lot on the issue of what happened with 40-year-old Sonny Bell. Let's go to our callers real quick. 30 seconds, please, caller.
Okay, caller two, you're on air.
Okay, thank you. Hello?
Yes.
This is Mike Randolph. Walter, how you
Mike,
doing?
What's going on, man?
Good. I had to jump in on today's conversation
When I was young in Baltimore, I was part of a gang. Baltimore is probably one of the most violent cities in the nation. If you're familiar with The Wire, The Corner, Poor Black and In Trouble, and Homicide,
right,
all of those were done in Baltimore. In my situation, you didn't have a choice. You grew up in a neighborhood and you were brought up into a gang. So I understand the nature of gang, how to attract you, and what makes it so attractive, being that power, having the gun in your hand, being respected. All those things is part of that game. In my case, the community kicked me out. They saw me as an opportunity to make it, and I couldn't go back on the corners again once I started to go to college, because they said, no, you hadn't in the different track. And I thank the streets, because if it wasn't for the streets, I could be in some prison or something. So I understand the nature of gangs, and that's why I work so well in those most violent neighborhoods, because I understand how the gang members, how they think. And that becomes very important. So I wanted to call in on that, because there's so many, and Baltimore is still one of the most violent neighborhoods in the world. The murder rate in Baltimore is 10 times the rate in Tampa. Mm. So we understand, and I appreciate you and for what you do. And I just wanted to call in and give that type of information related to that. So
thank you, brother. I appreciate that.
Thank you,
Mike. We appreciate that. Mike, let me tell you, to be clear about something. Mike Randolph is one of the premier contributors to community development here in Tampa. I mean, through the West Tampa CDC. I mean, he cannot be, is someone that you cannot ignore.
Okay.
When he opens his mouth and he talks about community development.
Yeah.
Mike Randolph's got to go.
And with that pass, that should be, he should have a whole lot to bring to the table.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
As a developer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, let's go to another caller. Caller, 30 seconds,
okay,
please.
Caller number 3, you're on air.
30 seconds, caller, 30 seconds. Go directly to your question.
Oh, I really want to appreciate the program. I don't have a question. I just want to say, you know, okay, we can't liquidate the whole colonial question, even when we talk about these organizations. I really appreciate the brother point, not the fact that many of our organizations that are now called crime organizations, you know, have their roots in organizing for political power, at least for political protection. And, you know, we must keep in mind that crime is nothing but the opinion of the ruling class. The same things that people accuse or call crimes when we organize and do it, acts carried out by the state all the time. You know, whether you're talking murder, drug selling, what have you, but because we accept the definition and nomenclature given, ascribed by the state to our activities as crime, we then conceptualize our activities as organized groups in our communities as a criminal. But that's not the case. We organize for power, and any aggression against or in opposition to state power, state control, and state rule in politics and economics is going to always be considered crime. I remember when in Rovers Park, sisters organized a kickball game, and the police, led by Jane Boyle-Conacaster and her heavy-handed squad, would run the organized kickball players out of the park and virtually criminalize that activity. So I really appreciate the program, but we can never abstract our condition, even the condition of our organized groups in our community, from the colonial situation in which we live.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. All right, we got another call here. Got another call. Let's go.
Yeah, caller number 4. You're on air.
All right, 30 seconds. Hey, caller, go directly to your question.
How you been doing, man? I'm up in Detroit. My father passed away, and so
man. How you doing, bro?
Fine. He was 104.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, good man. You know what I'm saying? But here's what I've been listening to your guest and to your other callers. First of all, and your last caller somewhat reflected on my feelings. Anytime black folks have organized into anything that we've organized, it's been considered criminal. Look at the formation of the NAACP. Mm-hmm. These were targeted as criminal organizations. Look at the work of Martin Luther King was a criminal, considered criminal organization, criminal. So the fact that we demand better education in our community, these groups are targets. So any group that is organized to better black folk around the world, or, I mean, and in this national, international problem, has been deemed criminal by, I think, the last gentleman said, the government itself. The other question I have is, your guest talked about the Italian. Let me say this about that. In terms of the Italians weren't considered whites until they came to this country. The Italians were totally, in fact, if you come to, even in this country, Italian people were lynched just like black folk. You read the case in New Orleans and around the country, because they were considered darker-skinned folks. And if you look
right
at
here
Benjamin
in Tampa.
Franklin,
yeah.
Yeah, you look at Benjamin Franklin and George, in the development of the Constitution, he excoriated Germans and Italians and those sort of things. And if you read the, and those sort of people, if you read the book, The Cast, you find that they talk about this, but Wilkins talks about this in the sense that one of the ways the Italians became accepted into the class of being called Caucasians in this country is that they had to demonstrate their hatred towards black folk. And in time and time, they became accepted that. But if you, in Europe, Italians are who? They're German. These people didn't become white until they became
racist.
Came to this country, and then it became. Even today, you go to you go over to Europe. You know, you right. call your. You know, there's a disdain for folks from Italy or from Belarus and those places. These people have a hatred towards each other.
We gotta cut you short, man.
Okay, I didn't
want to
frighten you.
It's cool. No, it's fine. We only got 30 seconds to each one, so I want to be fair to everybody. But thank you, Billy. Appreciate it. Billy, we are within the norms. We want to make sure that we're within the norms. He great information. He's always been doing great with contributing to the show. So we love that brother a great deal, a great deal. Let's go to our next caller.
Caller number two, you're on air.
You have 30 seconds, caller. Please go directly to your question or statement.
Okay, I've got two quick questions. Well, a statement and a question. I was in Chicago in 68, and the press was trying to place the disciples that control the west side of Chicago against the Rangers, which were on the south side of Chicago. My question is concerning the black gangs in Detroit, Michigan. And does your guest have any names that he can mention without, you know, repercussion, okay? I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Thank you.
Kevin, you there?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, absolutely. Well, the folks I'm going to name, they no longer around, you know. And again, you know, I made some calls to some people that I know in different cities that I have connections with, you know, of course, back home in St. Louis, my folks in Chicago, and a couple of people I know up in Detroit, and they gave me the okay. So I would say YBI was one that was Young Boys Incorporated, you know, which were basically a teenage group that was heavily organized, primarily in the 80s. You had the Chambers Brothers. You also had the Best Friends organization over on the east side of Detroit. As you know, the Earl Flynn's that go way, way, way back that Walter just mentioned earlier. And you had the Murder Row that goes way, way back as well. And you know BMF as well, because as I stated, BMF was a Detroit / St. Louis based organization.
Yeah. There's a new show about that's coming out about them, I think.
Yeah, it was. And people wondered how was it a Detroit / St. Louis. Well, the leadership was out of Detroit and St. Louis, and they kind of connected through a network that they set up prior to them getting into the music industry. So that's why it was kind of a split
St. Louis faction, Detroit faction, and they also set up, you know, chapters in other cities all over the country as well. So.
Okay.
I know we're out of time, but this is fascinating. And, you know, one thing that we probably need to get more in depth in is how gun running works, because we talk about the drugs flooding the inner city, the guns are flooding the inner city. At kids, we have laws against people under 18 toting guns, but that doesn't stop them from getting it. So this whole idea of how the guns are being delivered to these communities and ended up with killing people like Sonny Bell is, I think, is a discussion that's beyond due.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Brother, we want to thank you for this information and what we talked about, because there's so much more. This is expansive, not expensive, expansive. Right? This is an extraordinary conversation, because we could go on and on talking about this, but I tell you what we're going to do. After we do the series that's coming up, I want to bring Brother Liddell back.
All right.
And let's talk some more about this, okay? Kevin, you think you up for that?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, definitely. You just let me know when, and we can make it happen.
All right, brother. All right. Hey, man. Listen, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for coming on with us. We appreciate it. And listen, to everybody out there, if you are listening, please, remember Sonny Bell, 4-year-old Sonny Bell. This is not a joke. This is serious. When we talk about this issue of making sure that we are that we are a community, and making sure that we're a strong community, and making sure defining who we are, I think we're starting to lose that. We're starting to lose that. And when we start to lose that is when kids can die like this child here. When we're killing each other, it means that we no longer have a self-value. We're losing that. We cannot lose our self-value, folks. We've been stripped of it. And we can no longer strip ourselves more than what we have been. We can't afford that. We can ill afford that. Please, please, raise your children to focus in on other things, things that are more important, to do things that are important, to be involved in things that transform communities, that transform lives in a positive way. You know, it used to be the OGs on the corner used to be like, man, take your behind to school. Now they're dragging them into this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
No, take your behind to school. That's my word for the day.
Turn gangsters into revolutionaries.
There we go. Hey, listen, I want to thank you again for joining us, Kevin Liddell. I want to thank you all for watching us on Facebook. I want to thank you all for listening to us here on WMNF 88.5 Tampa, Sarasota, St. Pete, here on the Sunday Forum. And we're going to leave you today with Street Life by the Crusaders, 1979. Okay. And let me tell you, as always, from my voice to the radio waves to the hearts and the minds of the people, we love you. And there's absolutely nothing you can do about it here on the Sunday Forum.
This is Truth Radio, 88.5 WMNF.
I still hang around, neither lost nor found. Hear the Lord.